horses in the sun. I'm supposed to get it right and done. All the tired horses in the sun. I'm supposed to get it right and done. All the tired horses in the sun. How's I supposed to get any riding done? All the tired horses in the sun. How am I supposed to get any riding done? I'm not supposed to get any riding done.
On a night like this, I'm so glad you came around. Hold on to me so tight and heat up some coffee ground. We got much to talk about and much to reminisce. It sure is right on a night like this. On a night like this, I'm so glad you're here to stay. Hold on to me, pretty miss, and say you'll never go away too stray. Run your fingers down my spine and bring me a touch of bliss. It sure feels right on a night like this. On a night like this, I can't get any sleep. The air is so cold outside and the snow is so deep. Build a fire, throw on logs, and listen to it hiss, and let it burn, 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 burn on a night like this. But your body looks to mine and keep me company. There is plenty of room for us, so please don't elbow me. Let the four winds blow. If I'm not too far off, I think we did this once before. There's more frost on the window glass with each new tender kiss, and it sure feels right on a night like this.
Not just on a night like this, on a day like this. This would be Bob Dylan's 84th birthday. I would be Eric Nelson. If you're tuning in to What a Week, well, I hope you won't be sorely disappointed. I hope you'll be exhilarated because we have a special three-hour Bob Dylan birthday special. And I'm joined right now, the moment of truth here, by two artists, singer-songwriters, writers, and all-around wonderful creative forces of nature, Amy Rigby and Elizabeth Nelson. Are you guys there?
We're here.
We're here.
There they are. I'll introduce you both here in, on the odd chance that people are not familiar with your work. Elizabeth, you'll go first, and I'm taking this from the Oxford American. So this is sort of a semi-official. I assume you had some sort of creative control over what they write about you. Elizabeth Nelson's a singer-songwriter for the Washington, D.C.-based garage punk band The Paranoid Style. also a civil servant in the field of education policy. That one was new to me. And a regular contributor to The Ringer, The Oxford American, The New York Times Magazine, and Pitchfork, Washington Post as well. In 2020, Spin Magazine ranked The Paranoid Style the 27th best rock band currently working, thereby adding 26 names to Elizabeth's renowned enemies list. And Elizabeth, you also wrote the liner notes to Dylan's massive 27 CD 1974 box. And you joined me, I think, back in September, and we spent a fair amount of time spelunking in that. And even more relevant to all of this, and something I didn't know, you're an expert and writer on golf, right? That is something that we may be getting back into. Amy Rigby, this is from your own webpage, so I assume it's almost up to date. Amy Rigby is one of America's enduring underground cult indie artists, combining the insight and humor of country and folk songwriter with classic rock craftsmanship and punk DIY spirit. Amy formed pre-Americana country band Last Roundup in the Shams in downtown New York before launching the solo career with Diary of a Mod Housewife. Amy's honest, kinetic songwriting has earned her praise from critics and other artists. I like this by Steve Earle. Think Randy Newman and Loudon Wainwright at their best. And your 2019 memoir, Girl to City, was called an instant classic by the Big Takeover. And you're joining us from England, the UK, where you're living with husband, an occasional duo partner and partner in crime and whatever else, the great Reckless Eric. And last month, you brought the house down. I was there in a sold-out show here in Santa Cruz. So welcome to you both.
Thanks, Eric. Oh, it's funny. I just found a note to myself that I should update my bio on my website.
What, like, are we missing? What's we should?
Well, I realized that earlier today. Oh, like, I had him put that I had a new album, and you know, these things that they, you just can't like keep up with everything. But anyway, I thought that wasn't so bad, really. So it just didn't mention my new album from 2024 called Hang In There With Me.
Are you ahead of the Paranoid Style? So are you on Elizabeth's death list there? Elizabeth, I know you're keeping that list close. Is she in there?
Do I count as a band if I'm just a lone troubadour? Is that, are we on the list if we're just like solo people?
I think of you as a band, like a king in a kingdom or a queen in a queendom, Amy. So, but absolutely never, ever would Amy be on my list of enemies. Although when we're talking about updating bios, I probably have added more 27 to that list at this point, but Amy, never, ever, ever.
Oh, thank you.
Well, we're gathered here together, and you know, I've been thinking. Well, first off, I should point out that Bob Dylan is playing a show tonight. This is the only in his storied career, and I'm one of those guys who know these things. This is only the fourth show he's ever done on his birthday. So, in the last 64 years, to our best knowledge, tonight in Ridgefield, Washington, this is a birthday show. And you got to love the fact that Bob Dylan, Bob Dylan, it's like Mount Rushmore doing a gig, you know, pulling himself off the mountain and going down and playing night after night after night. He's just out there. He's a working musician. It's mind-boggling to me. And to be able to get together on the occasion of his birthday when he's out there working is an extra treat. Because I hate to say it, and I hope, I don't want to be general bring down here, but there'll be a time when Bob isn't touring, and there may be a time when Bob's not around to, you know.
Don't say that.
I know. Never. It's like, you know,
let's not think about that. But you know what was so great? Well, you know, people keep posting songs from this tour, and somebody put up a version of Gotta Serve Somebody. I'm not sure where it was from. Idaho. It was from Idaho the other night. And it was just so great feeling, you know, you say he came down off Mount Rushmore, but it felt so human. It felt so real. He hit this really bad clunker on the piano. And then they like brought it back around, and it just felt so alive, and it just reminded me like what music is, and like that, you know, so I don't see him as like this, you know, this kind of stone on the mountain kind of stony figure, but just like this living, breathing artist that's like always out there giving us something new to be excited about.
Well, what we've done, and you both have put it together, is I've been hounding you relentlessly over the last week to get a playlist together, which is basically pick the songs that you, Amy, and you, Elizabeth, just wanted to hear and talk about. And so the construct of this show, such as it is we're just going to play, kind of go back and forth, you know, one that you picked, Elizabeth, one that you picked, Amy, and then just talk about it a little bit and listen to it too. So it's kind of a listening party. And what's great, dear listener, and we know where you are and who you are, is you're going to join with us. So we're just going to kind of listen to Dylan's music and react to it in real time. And that's, I think, the best way to celebrate someone like Bob Dylan. You know, yeah, I will go off in my usual arcana and pointless, or in the words of Bob Dylan, my useless and pointless knowledge about Dylan. And what I'm looking forward to very much from both of you, since you're both singer-songwriters and you're in Dylan's line of work, is just your insights, you know. And also I want to talk to you. You've both been on the road. I know, Elizabeth, you went to the Dylan Museum in Tulsa, and I'm going to insist you tell us all. Wow. And Amy, you just got back from a solo troubadour take the train by yourself, Malmo, Norway, Germany.
And it's funny because I kind of blame Bob Neuwirth for that. Because when I met him years ago, he was like, you can just ride on a train anywhere with your guitar and go play. And so I really always wanted to do that in Europe. And anyway.
And Bob Neuwirth, for those who aren't Dylan-obsessed fanatics like the present company, is, and don't look back, the guy with the sunglasses who's always on Bob Dylan's side. And basically, he's the guy who, and it was handed down by some other hipster in Boston, the entire cool thing, you know, Dylan's whole thing. He kind of soaked up from Neuwirth, and then they passed that cool thing down to T-Bone Burnett, and it lives on. And Neuwirth got T-Bone Burnett into it. But Neuwirth is a central, one of the most influential, unknown, unless you know, characters of American popular culture. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's the man. Well, Amy, we'll start with you. And you, it's interesting. One thing I want to point out is I'm not surprised how eclectic the list is, but I'm gratified how much of the music isn't the classics. I can pretty much promise you folks we're not going to hear the hits. We're going to hear stuff, great music from Dylan, but it's not the stuff you would imagine. And so much of it is from the 80s and the 90s, from recent stuff. You know, unfortunately, I must tell you, no Blowing in the Winds, no Like a Rolling Stones, no I Want You, no hits. But it's all such vital music. So, Amy, do you want to set up I think you have the playlist in front of you.
Oh my God, I don't.
Don't Fall on a Part of Me Tonight.
Oh, okay. From Springtime in New York.
Yeah. Why did you pick that one?
You know, it's interesting. You say it's mostly from the 80s and 90s. It just feels like it is a lifelong thing, kind of learning all these songs and versions. And so sometimes you just kind of get into these periods of time and go like, oh, you know, like Knocked Out Loaded, I didn't really know that album. And then you kind of spend a while with it. And I guess I got that with Springtime in New York, which is, I think, from Infidels, the like outtakes from Infidels, which is another album that I kind of, you know, was late to discover. And so, you know, there's some tracks on there that like weren't released, that they didn't include the songs on the album. And so that, you know, this is just one. I think I gave you four from that, from the outtakes. And this was one of them. And I just think it feels like of the moment. Is it from the 80, like, I don't know, is it like
83, 80, I think?
83. And so it's kind of, it's not like a disco song, but the way he says girl, and, you know, like, I don't know, it felt sort of like a little bit of a soul song of the early 80s, I guess.
That was the lecture. This would be the lab.
before you leave, girl. Just a minute before you touch the door. What is it you're trying to achieve, girl? Maybe we can just talk about it some more. You know the streets are filled with vipers that lost all ray of hope. You know it's not even safe no more in the palace of the Pope. Don't fall apart on me tonight. I just don't think that I could handle it. Don't fall apart on me tonight. Yesterday is just a memory. Tomorrow's never what it's supposed to be. And I need you, yeah. From over here, from over there, girl. Sit down here, you can have my chair. I can't see us going anywhere, girl. The only place open is 1,000 miles away, and I'm not gonna take you there. I wish I'd have been a doctor. Maybe I'd have saved some lives that have been lost. Maybe I'd have done some good in the world instead of burning every bitch I cross. Don't fall apart on me tonight. I just don't think that I could handle it. Don't fall apart on me tonight. Yesterday is just a memory. Tomorrow's never what it's supposed to be. And I need you, yeah, you. I need you. I ain't too good at conversation, girl. So you might not know exactly how I feel. But if I could, I'd bring you to the mountaintop, girl. And build you a house out of stainless steel. But it's like I'm stuck inside a painting that's hanging in the Louvre. My throat starts to tickle and my nose itches, but I know that I can't move. Don't fall apart on me tonight. I just don't think that I could handle it. Don't fall apart on me tonight. Yesterday is gone, but the past lives on. Tomorrow's just one step beyond. And I need you. Oh yeah, I need you. Who are these people that are walking towards you? You know them or whatever you fight. With their humorless smile so easy to see through, can they tell you what's wrong from what's right? Or do you remember Napoleon's speech where your blue jacket piece man? You were so fine, Clark Gable would have fell at your feet and laid his life on the line. Try to get beneath the surface waves, girl. No more booby traps and bombs. No more decadence and charm. No more affection that's misplaced, girl. No more mud cake creatures lying in your arms. What about that millionaire with the drumsticks in his pants? He looked so baffled and so bewildered when he played and we didn't dance. Don't fall apart on me tonight. I just don't think that I could handle it. Don't fall apart on me tonight. Yesterday is just a memory. Tomorrow's never what it's supposed to be. And I
That sounds like Mark Knopfler on guitar. It is, in fact, Mark Knopfler on guitar. The long-suffering Mark Knopfler produced the Infidels album and fought a losing battle with Bob to have him not put Union Sundown and Neighborhood Bully on the record and put Blind Willie McTell or Tight Connection to My Heart or Don't Fall Apart in Me Tonight, all of which Bob, Foot of Pride, all of those songs which Bob in his infinite Bobness decided, no, I don't want to put those out. You're listening to a 3-hour, well, actually 2-hour and 40-minute deep dive into the birthday boy Bob Dylan's music with Amy Rigby and Elizabeth Nelson. Elizabeth, any thoughts on that last song? Amy set it up pretty nicely. You just heard it jogged your memory there.
I was texting you guys about this. I was messing with my audio on this side, so I kind of missed quite a bit of this. But I think something that is going to be worth talking about with regard to Dylan leaving songs off of records, I find is a fascinating thing. And I know we've got a couple of other ones that he left off of Infidels on this list. And I mean, Amy, you know, you're a songwriter, you've been in the studio a bunch. Like, sometimes, you know, like, you listen to a song and you think that's not the way I wanted it to come out, and so you just leave it off the record. And, you know, we're all sitting here scratching our heads thinking, like, how could we leave this, how could Dylan leave this off of a record? And it's something that when he does it, I'm always amazed, because usually it's a masterpiece. And I don't know if he knew that there would be like bootleg series and whatnot, where we would celebrate all of this tossed off material. But, you know, as a songwriter, I'm always like super frustrated because it's like, man, I wish that was my outtake.
Sometimes I think maybe like with that one, I think what I was trying to say and not very eloquently when I was introducing it was it kind of feels like the early days of rap, and he got inspired, and he kind of, you know, like the way the kind of cadence and the phrasing felt a little bit like, you know, the early 80s and you know, Grandmaster Flash, you know, like what you were hearing even on the radio, the early rap releases that you know, the average person would come across. And I feel like maybe it was like of its time, and so he felt like, oh, you know, it's not going to age well, or I don't know, with that one, maybe.
Well, in a great story, though, and it's true that when they were doing Blonde on Blonde, when Dylan was running through the sketches of the songs for Al Kooper, he ran through I Want You, which Kooper then made a huge, huge mistake and said, wow, that's like the best of the bunch. So, true story. What do you think the last song Bob Dylan recorded on the Blonde on Blonde sessions, all the way at like, you know, 3 a.m, he's got a plane to catch 3 hours later for a concert, he waits till the very end to bang out I Want You, just because, you know, it's Bob. And interesting point, Amy, brought up phrasing, because that's the thing that is so striking with Bob, is his phrasing, the way he tells his stories. I did a 3-hour show a few days ago just on Bob Dylan's performing. Forget his songwriting, forget his, you know, everything, just Bob singing and harmonica playing. And his phrasing is always so striking. Even bad Bob, he's always up to something. You know, it's there's a intent there. And today too, you know, the stuff he's doing right now on stage, his storytelling and the way he's delivering the material is just so unique and so idiosyncratic and so totally Bob Dylan. So I'm looking now, and this is interesting, Elizabeth. This is going to be over to you. You chose this next song very specifically. You wanted this performance from the Newport Folk Festival, July 26, 1964. You didn't just want to hear the song. You wanted this particular performance. So justify this choice, please, for us.
I think any performance of this song is great. excuse me. I decided to go with an early version of it because, you know, why not? It's fun. You know, I guess probably all of us went to go see A Complete Unknown, which focuses around this time in Dylan's career. And playing the Newport Folk Festival. But the reason why I chose this song specifically, and I said, as I say, any version of it is great. But I think
And I mean, like, I don't know, am I not supposed to say the title of the track is on tenterhooks wondering what the hell is it?
Well, I'll tell you that he was doing this song, of which we won't mention, but you're about to give away, last week. He performed this song last week. He brought it out. So it's been an enduring classic. And I'll give it away, folks. It's my job. This is To Ramona.
And I love this song. I think it's absolutely beautiful. And it sounds to me like, you know, he's actually talking to a real person. I think that Dylan has a bad reputation, and perhaps deserved, that he does not write well about women. And he was certainly very callow when he was young. And I think that gets portrayed really nicely in the movie, or at least really adequately, and made it very, very clear that he was not a nice person, especially around women. But with this, you know, he just, you know, it sounds like he's being very sincere. And I mean, like, it's a matter of lore as to who this song is about. My personal feeling is that it is about Joan Baez, who, of course, is also in the movie and was definitely one of his muses and, you know, a person who really elevated his career and a great interpreter of his material. And I just love the song.
This is called To Ramona. Ramona, just a name. Ramona, come closer, shut softly your watery eyes. The pangs of your sadness will pass as your senses will rise. For the flowers of the city, though breath-like yet death-like at times. To deal with the dying, though I cannot explain that in lines. Your cracked country lips I still wish to kiss, as to be by the strength of your skin. Your magnetic movement still captures the myths I'm in. But it grieves my heart, love, to see you trying to be a part of a world that just don't exist. It's all just a scheme, babe, a vacuumed dream, babe, that sucks you into feeling like this. I can see that your head has been twisted and fed with worthless foam from the mouth. I can tell you I've torn between staying and returning on back to the south. You've been fooled into thinking that the finishing end is at hand. If there's no one to beat you, no one to defeat you, except the thoughts of yourself feeling bad. I've heard you say many times that you're better than no one, and no one is better than you. If you really believe that, you know you got nothing to win and nothing to lose. From fixtures and forces and friends, your sorrow does stem. That hype you and type you, making you feel that you must be just like them. Forever talk to you, but soon my words, they would turn into a meaningless ring. But deep in my heart I know there is no help I can bring. Everything passes, everything changes, just do what you think you should do. And someday, maybe, who knows, baby, I'll come and be crying to you.
So, Amy, you texted me during that, chills.
Oh, yeah. That, well, I think that was Elizabeth, and I said, oh, wow.
Oh, you did, oh, wow. That was the, you both are pro communicators here. Wow and chills. That's excellent. Well, a little timeline there. This is where I get into the train spotting thing, but it's my approach to Dylan, something so miraculous, talent, this all-encompassing. So he goes over to England in late May of 64, May 24th, and plays maybe one of the greatest shows he ever played, May 24th at the Festival Hall. That's when he trots out Mr. Tambourine Man for the first time, etc. Then he goes over to Greece for a couple of weeks, and he pretty much writes all these songs, Spanish Harlem Incident, To Ramona, a lot of the stuff on the Another Side album he bangs out. This is July 26th, 1964. He workshops Mr. Tambourine Man. He plays it. There's a great, great film of that particular performance. And then the album Another Side comes out. But the headline here is no one had heard To Ramona when he performed it then. No one had heard All I Really Want to Do. Nobody had heard Mr. Tambourine Man. So people at the Newport Festival are hearing those songs for the very first time. I mean, can you imagine just hearing, you know, Bob trotting out Mr. Tambourine Man? It wasn't just that song. It was an entire new language. It was just elevating everyone's game. I mean, that's just my historical observation here. But again, you have, from a songwriting perspective, Elizabeth, you know, any, after hearing that again, any thoughts come to mind?
Beyond what I've already said, I'm going to just reiterate how beautiful I think it is.
And that's the show, by the way, where he meets Johnny Cash for the first time. Newport, you know, they did have that. I won't even get into A Complete Unknown because I already did 2 hours where I basically deconstructed and rearranged the music in that film appropriately. I don't want to bore people with my ever humble opinion on that. So we will move on. But they did get that kind of right. Now, the next song, Amy, you chose was from one of Bob's most maligned albums. So there's a theme going here with you. This is from the At Budokan album, which when it came out was wildly disparaged. But you picked it. So tell us what... I won't say what were you thinking because I think it's an underrated album, and I agree. I can't wait to hear it. But what possessed you to pick this particular song?
Well, whenever I start getting a little depressed, I think, like, if all I ever do with the rest of my life is just listen to any Bob Dylan album, song, you know, just outtake that I never heard before, I feel like it would be time well spent and worth living for. And like last year, my daughter Hazel has this radio show on K-Chung. It's a Los Angeles, like a community radio station.
We love so community radio stations.
Yep, gotta love them. And she does it, her show, which is called Nervous Breakthrough, and it's like the last Wednesday of every month or something like that. Once a month she does this show. And I love listening to her show. I hear all kinds of stuff I've never heard before, and it just feels like a trip inside my daughter's brain, which has always been this amazing brain. But one of the times last year, she was playing these songs from Budokan, and I just was like, what is this? This is blowing my mind. I've never heard these before. There's flute, there's fiddle. You know, like it was just like this, all these arrangements and his singing and just the whole performance. I just went down a rabbit hole. I even like was like searching like kind of conspiracy theory like, did this concert ever really happen? There's no footage of it that I can find. And I felt like maybe it's a construct and it actually was recorded in the studio, because the arrangements and the performances are so perfect. I don't, am I crazy? Do you feel that way about it?
Elizabeth, thoughts on the Budokan album?
I love the idea that, you know, it's a fake moon landing.
Yeah, Stanley Kubrick was in there somewhere, I think. Well, yeah, let's just listen.
But then I did find a, it was the Japan, you know, because it's recorded in Japan, and the head engineer, who I think he was based in Los Angeles, but he, like, Bob wanted him to be the one who was, like, the engineer of the show. I did find, like, a very detailed account by him about the recording and the you know, the whole thing.
And it was at the top of the tour, too. He started off the 78 tour there, so this was recorded at the top of the tour. And if you go down the rabbit hole of Bob's 1978 show tapes, it only got better and better and better. So this is at the top of the tour. But let's go to it right now. And this is, again, another Bob Love song. This is after it comes from Blood on the Tracks. You'll know it, recognize the song, if not the arrangement, immediately.
There's a simple love story. Happened to me.
Sure, Bob.
They sat together in the park as the evening sky got dark. She looked at him, he felt a spark tingle to her bones. 'Twas then she felt alone and wished that she'd gone straight and watched out for a simple twist of fate. They walked along by the old canal, little confused, I remember well. Stopped into a renovated hotel with a neon burning bright. She felt the heat of the night hit her like a freight train moving with a simple twist of fate. Someplace played. She was walking on by the arcade. She heard the melody rise and fade. The sun was coming up. She dropped a coin into the cup of a blind man at the gate and forgot about a simple twist of fate. He woke up and she was gone. He didn't see nothing but the dawn. Got out of bed and put his clothes back on. Pushed back the blind. Found a note she'd left behind. But he could not concentrate on anything except a simple twist of fate. Ticking of the clocks, walks alone through the city blocks, hunts her down by the waterfront docks where the sailors all come in. Maybe he'll see her once again. How long must he wait? One more time for a simple twist of fate. People tell me it's a crime to you remember her for too long a time. She should have caught me in my prime. She would have stayed with me instead of going back off to sea and leaving me to meditate upon that simple twist of fate.
KSQD thanks Santa Cruz Cinema for their support. Santa Cruz Cinema presents a family-friendly luau night Saturday, May 31st. Luau night begins at 4 p.m., including Hawaiian music, luau dancers, and a screening of Lilo and Stitch. More information at santacruzcinema.com. Thank you, Santa Cruz Cinema, for supporting community radio K-Squid, 89.5, 89.7, and 90.7 FM.
Simple Twist of Fate, the Budokan tour. One of the reasons I think that tour got a little flack was that was Bob's Jerry Weintraub, Neil Diamond phase. I caught up with that tour in Oakland, and he wasn't wearing makeup, but he definitely had a kind of went full Elvis on that tour, probably quite deliberately. So the visual package sort of offset the great music that was played.
I guess it was a little cheesy, wasn't it? But I don't know, in a wonderful way, I thought,
yeah.
Those arrangements.
Oh, well, the arrangements are great, and relatively on the melody, too. The deconstruction phase of Dylan's live performances would start coming, but right then they were just sort of fleshed out arrangements. You know, it's what people would, a lot of people who are giving Bob flack in recent years would say, oh, well, you know, they don't sound like the songs. It's not, they're not meeting us, the audience, halfway. This is the tour where he really met the audience halfway. He talked, he played the hits, he did everything, right. And then he still, you know, he can't win if you're Bob Dylan. So Elizabeth Nelson, you picked the next song. You were specific on the version. This was an outtake, of course, from the Oh Mercy album produced by Daniel Lanois. And probably Lanois made the mistake of saying what a great song it was. And out it went, along with Series of Dreams. It's a good choice. Do you want us to listen for, or what made you pick this one?
So wait, I'm sorry. I picked this one.
Was Dignity not yours?
Oh, Dignity was mine.
No, it was yours. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
I mean, I'll comment on it, but
yeah,
I
please
don't...
do. I just, yeah, I didn't have the little A and the E next to the song choice. I tried to alternate back and forth, but Amy, you picked it. We'll go two in a row from Amy Rigby. How's that?
Okay. Well, this one, you know, this is another one that I just kind of tuned into lately. I don't even know how or why it came up, but I just started listening to it kind of endlessly, and just kind of loved the song, the arrangement, guitar playing, everything about it. But it kind of leads me to talk about, you know, like Bob people, and that you meet out there, like other Dylan, you know, people that just make you feel like, well, I'm just like a, you know, I'm a fan, but I'm like a pretender to be a fan, because like I played this show in New Jersey last month, and this lovely guy Steve was the host, and he you know, we were just talking about Bob after the show, and he'd seen him at least 300 times, he said, probably kind of more like you're kind of fan, Eric, but that was when I was onto a Dignity kick, and I said, like, you know, from what I understand, he hasn't really played it live very much, and he was like, you know, only, yeah, he kind of said back in the early 90s that he had. But then that night he emailed me and said, Bob, fact, he did play Dignity last year in Prague, so at least once last year. Here's a link to the set list. I'm going to try to find the recording. And then like 2 hours later, he emailed me again, found that Dignity, and there's the YouTube and the version of it from Prague. So just kind of that level of obsession, I just like really, really respect and admire.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but that level of obsession,
it's not ringing
any bells with me whatsoever, folks. ladies and germs, Dignity was at least played once in Prague.
Fat man looking at a blade of steel. Thin man looking at his last meal. Hollow man looking at a cotton field. For dignity. Wise man looking at a blade of grass. Young man looking in the shadows that pass. Poor man looking to paint it black. For dignity. Somebody got murdered on New Year's Eve. Somebody said dignity was the first to leave. I went into the city, went into the town, went into the land of the midnight sun. Searching high, searching low, searching everywhere I know. Asking the cops wherever I go, have you seen dignity? Blind man breaking out of a trance, puts his both hands in the pockets of chance. Hoping to find one circumstance of dignity. I went to the wedding of Mary Lou. She said, I don't want nobody to see me talking to you. Said she could get killed if she told me what she knew about dignity. I went down where the vultures meet. I would have gone deeper, but there wasn't any need. Heard the tongues of angels and the tongues of men. Wasn't any difference to me. Chilly wind sharp as a razor blade. House on fire, debts unpaid. Gonna stand at the window, gonna ask the maid, have you seen dignity? Listening to the voice he hears in a crowded room full of covered up mirrors. Looking into the lost, forgotten years for dignity. Met Prince Philip at the home of the blues. Said he gave me information if his name wasn't used. He wanted money up front. Said he was abused by dignity. Footprints running across the silver sand. Steps going down into tattoo land. Amid the sons of darkness and the sons of light. In the border towns of despair. Got no place to fade. Got no coat. I'm on the rolling river. In a jerking boat. Trying to read a note somebody wrote. Sick man looking for the doctor's cure. Looking at hands for the lines that were. And into every masterpiece of literature for dignity. Englishman stranded in a black hot wind. Combing his hair back, his future looks thin. Bites the bullet, and he looks within for dignity.
Someone showed me a picture and I just laughed. Dignity never been photographed. I went into the red, went into the black, into the valley of dry bone dreams. So many roads, so much at stake. Too many dead ends, I'm at the edge of the lake. Sometimes I wonder what it's gonna take to find dignity.
Dignity, the best song on Oh Mercy that wasn't on Oh Mercy, but a great standalone song, and apparently performed once in Prague. Thank you for that, Amy Rigby. Elizabeth Nelson, now you chose the next song, and this was part of your the Stockholm Syndrome, basically, because you were under lock and key listening, going through all 27 CDs of Bob's 1974 box set. So you wrote those fantastic liner notes to it. So over to you for an introduction to this one.
Yeah, and thank you for reminding me of that experience of writing those liner notes, something that I'm extremely proud of. And by the way, the box set sold out, so that's a, you know,
that's
a pretty
no
cool
more?
Thing to have happen. I don't think you can get a copy. There's a sampler available on streaming, but you can't get the set
we
anymore.
We obsessives are mighty, that's all I can say.
But, I know, and God bless each and every last one of you. But anyway, the song that I chose from the set, and I think it's a good one, is this one, Nobody Except You. And in the liner notes, like, I think it's one of the greatest moments in the whole collection. And it's, like, again, just this beautiful little song that he left off of Planet Waves for some reason. And, I mean, we probably talked about this when we talked about the set, Eric, but I find it just to be very moving. And I think in its modest way, it's like one of Dylan's saddest songs. You know, he remembers being a carefree child and desperately trying to channel that emotional space, but it's no longer accessible to him, and it never will be. And so it's this window into the past that's closed, and he can look through it and see it, but he can't return. And it doesn't hurt that Robbie Robertson's guitar playing's really good on it, too. So I just love it.
Nothing around here to me that's sacred except you. There's nothing around here that I believe in except you. Yes, you. You're the one that reaches me, you're the one that I admire. Every time we'll meet, you know, I feel like I'm on fire. Nothing matters to me, and there's nothing I desire except you, you. Ain't nothing around here I care to try for except you. Got nothing here to live or die for except you, yes, you. There's a hymn I used to hear in the churches all the time. Make me feel so good inside, so peaceful, so sublime. Now there's nothing to remind me of that old familiar chime except you, yes, you. Used to run in the cemetery laughing, sing and play when I was a child, and it never seemed strange. Now I just pass mournfully by that place where the bones of life are piled. I know something has changed.
I'm a stranger here, and no one sees me except you. You. Nothing anymore seems to please me except you. Yes, you. Nothing hypnotizes me or holds me in a spell. Everything runs by me like water from a well. Everybody wants my attention, everybody's got something to sell except you. Yeah, you.
So, Amy Rigby, you texted me saying you'd never heard that before. So, as a connoisseur of Bob Dylan and great music in general, what's your reaction to that?
It felt like an unusual song for him. I can't put my finger on it, but something about the melody or the. I don't know. It felt unusual. I'm going to have to listen to it again. But I was, or maybe how he came back to that line quite a lot. Anyway,
it's clearly an olive branch to Sarah. This is 73, and then Blood on the Tracks, which pretty much documents the relationship falling apart, is the next year. And on that same songwriting, he wrote a wedding song, Dirge, and Nobody Except You. It's sort of the Sarah intense curdled love trilogy, you know, quite the, and probably too close. Elizabeth, don't you think it's almost that that song cut too close, which is why he probably left it off. And he stopped performing it on the tour, I think. He only did it a few times at the top of the tour, and that was it. He abandoned
it. It was too revealing or something. I don't know. Of his heartache or something.
Yeah, and he'd come out again with Blood on the Tracks. I would be remiss in not pointing out doing what we call here in Radioland a station identification. This is KSQD Santa Cruz, KSQT Prunedale. And what is happening at the moment, we're celebrating Bob Dylan's 84th birthday. Bob's playing a gig tonight in Richland, Washington. That's one of the four in his 64-year career as a performing artist, if we really count it officially. This is only the fourth time he's played a show on his birthday. So, Bob, it goes out to you. And I'm with Amy Rigby and Elizabeth Nelson, and I will reset the table to that. But this right now is traditionally the time when hordes of Santa Cruz deadheads tune in to my show, The Grateful Dead Zone. So I'm going to give them 45 seconds of Grateful Dead, because you know how we are. We need to get our fix here. But I think this is, and speaking of rare performances, I believe this is the one and only time the Grateful Dead essayed this particular song. And that's it for the Grateful Dead here. And going totally down the rabbit hole into Dead trivia, that was August 14th, 1971, and they were playing that for David Crosby, who was in the was part of the entourage. Mm-hmm. David Crosby memorably was with Dylan when he got his degree at Princeton University in 1970. I don't know if you guys know about that, but Dylan got an honorary degree and then wrote the song "Day of the Locusts" about it. The reason I bring this up is it's seared in my memory. I was 13 years old and living in Princeton, New Jersey at the time.
Wow.
All I had to do was like bicycle down and see Bob Dylan. And, well, I didn't do it. And he wrote in that Day of the Locust song about he heard the locusts and his head was exploding while the trucks were unloading. The trucks that were unloading was at the supermarket that I was actually working at as an itinerant worker. So, and I will end that ridiculously self-indulgent digression right now. So
it's all connected.
It's all connected. I'm going to – in this next hour, I'm going to play songs. You guys are not just Dylan scholars. You're musicians, singer-songwriters in your own right. And Amy Rigby, you've written a couple of songs about Bob Dylan. I'm going to play one right now. This is just because it's a great song. And I want you, dear listeners, to appreciate between Elizabeth Nelson and Amy Rigby, got some serious analytical and artistic insight here. Because I found that artists and artists who do this for a living, as both of you do, have a lot more insights than us landlubbers who just kind of obsess over statistics and can't play a note and sort of speak to the music. And it's just wonderful to have you. And hopefully you won't bolt ship. We're done with hour one and we got two more hours to go. I'm going to play the song that name checks Philip Roth. Amy, do you want to say anything about this or do you want to just go for it and then talk about it afterwards?
Yeah, let's just go for it.
Step out onto that Nobel stage.
So Elizabeth Nelson, you're a fellow singer, songwriter, and rock critic. Why don't you make Amy Rigby blush here? I'll let you go for it.
Oh, okay. Well, so I was texting Amy and you guys while the song was playing that this is one of my very favorite songs by Amy. And I have many, many favorites. But this one I always thought was just a really, really cool idea. Amy, do you want to give us the title so that I don't mangle it?
I will, and also I have to give credit to, well, I'll tell you the title first, which is from Philip Roth at Gmail to rzimmerman@aol.com. And I would not have written this song if I hadn't gone to be an instructor at this song camp in Michigan, where the guy who runs the camp writes these very intricate song assignments, a different one for each camper and each instructor, and he kind of tailors them, and he knew I was a big Bob Dylan fan, and it was the year that Bob was getting the Nobel Prize, so that was kind of the assignment was what was going through Philip Roth's mind, and I turned it into this email from him to Bob, I really appreciated having an assignment to write to. I don't think I would have ever come up with something like that, but I just kind of ran with it and wrote the song in 3 minutes, which just like it. I'm glad it all came together.
No,
it's really, really cool, and I love that Dylan has an AOL account. And that's in a very important detail. I think, like, and you know, the writing a song in the sort of epistolary tradition is definitely like a technique that like songwriters go to, including Dylan himself, like Dear Landlord or something. But what I love about it is that I always imagine it as like just late period Philip Roth trying to figure out like how all of these accolades that should have been going to him are instead going to Bob Dylan. And like we're sort of redefining what the word literary means. And I love that because I feel like oftentimes, you know, and I don't want to talk poorly about poets or whatever, but like that songs can't be literature, and I disagree vehemently with that. And so I think that the idea that like, you know, Philip Roth is just scratching his head, being like, well, this should have been my Nobel Prize, Go ahead.
Sorry. I think I really sympathized or empathized with him at the time because I was trying to finish my own book, and I felt like this exhaustion and also, yeah, just this kind of like, this is the hardest thing I've ever done. It's so easy to write songs compared to this, compared to like just a blank page and words and no chords, no melodies, no rhythms to kind of help it along. So I think that maybe like helped me inhabit the character of Philip Roth. I kind of was on his side, really.
It reminds me weirdly of, and I think this is not apocryphal, somebody asked Randy Newman a question saying, who do you think's a better songwriter, Bob Dylan or Stephen Sondheim? And Newman's response was, Bob Dylan is better, but Sondheim is better more often. Which is a really interesting comment. You know, I'm just thinking when you mentioned, you know, Philip Roth and you know, coming out of, you know, a master of his particular genre in Dylan, and they, you know, you've put them together in their own universe. And to my knowledge, Sondheim has never said a single word about Dylan. And they, you know, and I'm a slavering fanatic Sondheim fan too. So my obsession goes. Well, I said to Elizabeth Nelson, I was gonna ask to play a Bob song, but I want to play one of yours, if you don't mind. And that's from the Interrogator album. It's just a song that I happen to like and somehow fits what we're doing right now. And when you say Gmail and AOL and us all texting together, you know where you can see where I'm going here, right? So let's play one of Elizabeth's. And if anything, I just want you, dear listener, to realize what we've got right now is two artists who, you know, walk it like they talk it, all celebrating another artist whose birthday it is today. But let's just let the song speak for itself.
So what you gonna do about it? The pug runs wild, people beguiled, the streets are defiled. So what you gonna do about it? Bad day for the group chat. Money talks, then money laughs. I've been waiting all my life for some decent tax advice. I've been waiting all my years. I have conquered all my fears. They swear you in and they wear you down before you paint the town. So what you gonna do about it? Last in the contest, words out of context, meet me in the comments. So what you gonna do about it? Bad day for the group chat. Money spoke, then money left. I've been spending all my time in some insane pantomime. I've been fair, but I've been cruel. I've consumed my share of
So a question for you, Elizabeth Nelson. It just struck me into the song. I came to your work by, ironically, your brilliant, I no longer I'm on Twitter, but your 140-word album reviews and little pithy discussions of songs was so good I gave up the radio show I was doing called Creative Bandwidth, which was sort of annotating and being talking articulately or in my vain attempt about music. And I read what you were doing and I said, okay, I quit. I can't come close to this. I don't want to do it anymore. So that's honestly how high my opinion is of your work.
Thank you.
Did you find that performing and, you know, writing songs and putting it out there in the world and standing on stages inhibits you writing about other musicians, or does it inform it? How does that work for you? Because, you know, you're commenting on other people's work while you're doing it, and that's an unusual. A lot of artists have opinions of other people's work, but they don't publish them.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, you know, at this point, you know, like, music journalism is in such a space, often very difficult to actually write pan. Want to get into a whole conversation about the music economy and why it's like an idea to write poorly about an artist. But we'll just bracket and we can talk about it later. But so usually when I was writing tweets, I was writing about songs that I like, which makes it a lot easier. necessarily. I wasn't saying why something sucked. It was more like why something was trenchant or interesting to me personally. But I've always subscribed to the idea that the best way to critique an album is to write a better album. So that has always been why I wrote songs and my approach to writing songs. Now, reasonable minds can disagree that my music is good or, you know, better than the album that I was trying to be better than. But that's always been the way I've thought about it, is that you should be able to critique a record and, you know, be able to write a better one if you're going to critique a record.
Well, you picked. Let's move on to, we are doing a birthday song about Bob Dylan. We might play one. This is one of yours, Elizabeth's fourth time around, a.k.a. Bob tweaking John Lennon in Norwegian Wood. And I'm not playing the album version. We'll talk about that in a moment. But what prompted this selection?
Well, I think for the reason that you just, talk about, you know, being a better record, you know, critiquing a band. I think Dylan, obviously, like all of us who, you know, have half of a brain, like, admire the Beatles. But I think that at that time he was kind of thinking maybe they were biting act a little bit, and so he was tweaking them by doing his version of Norwegian Wood. I mean, final couplet, not to spoil it, but he says, "I never took much, I never asked for your crutch, now don't ask for mine," which is such a scathing burn.
Lennon took it as such, too. Lennon took it as such.
Hell yeah.
Just venerated. Well, there's a great story, and this one is true. When Dylan, at the time this was recorded, this was on the Europe's 1966 tour, and I think the best acoustic set in Dublin, though the Sheffield Mr. Tambourine Man is the one for the gods, but the overall set at Dublin was just about perfect. But the Beatles were recording Revolver, and they brought an acetate of it over to play for Bob, and I don't know what John, I'm sure John played Tomorrow Never Knows or something, and Bob kind of looks at him and goes, "Oh, I see. You don't want to be cute anymore." To which John is reduced to component parts and leaves the room. Because Bob, I say this with all due respect, could be a real bitch sometimes, and that was it. But anyway, this is Dublin. And the thing that when we play this is, no one in the audience, Blonde and Blonde isn't out yet, right? So this is, they're hearing Bob's playing Visions of Johanna. No one's heard that. She's playing this. He plays gorgeous versions of Just Like a Woman. No one has heard that. So imagine hearing all of this for the first time. But yeah, Rubber Soul had come out the year before. So I think people were maybe scratching their heads saying, "Huh? What? Is this? Is he I'm sure your husband, Amy, would say, is he taking the piss or not with this song?"
Breaking my eyes and saying, "What else you got left?" It was then that I got up to leave, but she said, "Don't forget. Everybody must give something back for something they get." I stood there and hummed, I tapped on her drum, I asked her how come. She buttoned her boot and straightened her suit, and she said, "Don't be cute." So I forced my hands in my pockets and felt with my thumbs and gallantly handed her my very last piece of gum. She threw me outside. I stood in the dirt where everyone walked. But when finding out I'd forgotten my shirt, I went back and knocked. I waited in the hallway as she went to get it, and I tried to make sense out of that picture of you in your wheelchair that leaned up against her Jamaican rum. And when she did come, I asked her for some. She said, "No, dear." I said, "Your words are not clear. You better spit out your gum." She screamed till her face got so red, and she fell on the floor. And I covered her up and then went and looked through her drawer. And when I was through, I filled up my shoe and brought it to you. And you took me in. You loved me then. You didn't waste time. And I never took much. I never asked for your crutch. Now don't ask for mine.
John Lennon immediately heads into the arms of Yoko Ono at that art gallery, probably right after he heard that. The Beatles were certainly in the audience at Albert Hall. You're listening to, a Bob Dylan birthday special, and we have 1 hour and 40 minutes left to go. Time does fly by when you're having fun. I'm joined live, Amy Rigby from England, so you're not too far away from the Albert Hall, metaphorically. And Elizabeth Nelson, can you give us at least a state? You don't have to give your undisclosed secret location here, but where are you hailing from?
I am proximate to the CIA in McLean, Virginia.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, so definitely...
Probably
a lot of jobs opening up over there for the next round. The next round of hires. I wish we were doing another show because I would want to grill you with your golf expertise about. I know there was a piece of 10 years ago about Trump as golfer. I would think it's time for an investigative report on that, but we can't even begin to go down that road. So let's stick to music. Amy, next song, your choice, your call. I will give it away. It's from the Modern Times record, not an album that immediately comes to mind when you think of Best of Bob Dylan, but there's a lot of great stuff on it. So what prompted you to pick this next song?
I guess I always think of Modern Times as like the beginning of new Bob, Bob, just modern, I guess it feels like that period is still going on, but, I'm no scholar.
No, but a lot of these
things are subjective.
But that's the best part. Yeah.
Okay. So. And they completely, I think, have to do with what was going on in our lives when we heard a particular thing. And to me, this album was like my own kind of, I think it was like a rebirth for me. I just remember I was leaving Nashville. I was getting out of a bad relationship, put this album, the CD player into, the CD into the player of my Astro van as I drove up to Cleveland. And this song is the first track on Modern Times. And it just like, it just grabbed me. It felt like it gave me hope. It gave me just like motivation, energy. And I get that feeling every time I hear this song.
Thunder on the mountain and as far as the moon. The ruckus in the alley and the sun will be here soon. Today's the day you're gonna grab my trombone and blow. Well, it's hot stuff here and it's everywhere I go. I was thinking about Alicia Keys. Couldn't keep them quiet when she was born in Hell's Kitchen. I was living down the line. I'm wondering where in the world Alicia Keys could be. I've been looking for her even clear through Tennessee. Like my soul is beginning to expand. Took you to my heart and you were sort of understand. You brought me here, now you're trying to run me away. The writing on the wall, come read it, come see what it says. Sleep over there, that's where the music coming from. I don't need any guide, I already know the way. Remember this, I'm your servant both night and day. The pistols are popping and the power's down. I'd like to try something but I'm so far from town. The sun keeps shining and the north wind keeps picking up speed. Don't forget about myself for a while, go out and see what others need. I've been sitting down studying the art of love. I think it'll fit me like a glove. I want some real good woman to do just what I say. Everybody got to wonder what's the matter with this cruel world today. Stand beside my king. I would betray your love or any other thing. Gonna raise me an army, some tough sons of bitches. I recruit my army from the orphanages. I've been to St. Herman's Church, said my religious vows. I sucked the milk out of a thousand cows. She ain't no angel and neither am I. Shame on your greed, shame on your wickedness schemes. I'll say this, I don't give a damn about your dreams. Twister billion down on me. All the ladies in Washington are scrambling to get out of town. Look like something bad gonna happen. Better roll your airplane down. Everybody going in, I wanna go too. Don't wanna take a chance with somebody new.
I did all I could, I did it right there and then. I've already confessed, no need to confess again. Gonna make a lot of money, gonna go up north. I'll plant and I'll harvest what the earth brings forth. The hammer's on the table, the pitchforks on the shelf. For the love of God, God, take pity on yourself.
Fair for their support. The Redwood Mountain Fair benefits local nonprofits with live music on three stages from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. on May 31st and June 1st at Roaring Camp in Felton. 26 bands perform, including Jesse Daniels, Jerry's Middle Finger, and Keith Greniger. Information and tickets at redwoodmountainfair.com, spelled with an E. Thank you, Redwood Mountain Fair, for supporting community radio. K-Squid.
Sorry, Bob, there I harshed out that thrilling conclusion. Well, Elizabeth, you texted, that rocks. Amy, you tested it, so rocks. And you texted, the Modern Times is such a banger, Elizabeth. And it really was. What a breath of fresh air. I heard name-dropping. I don't know. I'm one degree of separation from Larry Charles, who did directed Mask and Anonymous, the Bob Dylan movie. And he told a friend that he was at the Love and Theft recording sessions, was, you know, in that world. And hearing that song in the various couplets, when he just says Bob has a bunch of lines sort of in a hat, literally, just stuff he's written in couplets, and he would put them together in the studio. So they'd be, you know, they'd just be, oh, this one would lead to this, and this. He just sort of assembled the songs in the studio for at least Love and Theft, and I have reason to believe for Blonde on Blonde as well. It's quite a process. My instinct is that both of you are a little more, you're not writing songs and recording them in the studios.
I don't think I've ever done that. I've come up with a bridge, but not never like a whole song from, you know, from the beginning.
Yeah, and you've listened. You see the evolution on that Cutting Edge Mammoth box set of the Blonde on Blonde material, where he's literally writing just like a woman. I mean, he has some vague idea in some of it, but he doesn't have it. And then all of a sudden he has it, and the clock is ticking, and the musicians are playing cards, et cetera, et cetera. It's why we love Bob, and why you can't as deep as you go. What was Paul Nelson's quote, that great writer Paul Nelson? And this is back in the late 66, 67. He wrote that, rooting around Bob Dylan, looking deep into Bob Dylan, it's like looking for the meaning of, like going in and looking at the ashes in an ashtray and looking for a meaning. But with Dylan, you're going to find it, you know? And there always is that sort of great mystery to him. All right, enough of my philosophical rambling here. Elizabeth, this next song I think was on your list. Why don't you tee us up here?
Well, sure. this next one is, I think, going to resonate with your standard audience of Grateful Dead fans, because it's a co-write with Robert Hunter, and probably... it's a fan favorite. It's one that he has been playing out on tour. So I thought it would be fun to listen to it, especially since it's like the best song on Down in the Groove. And I think he recorded it with the Dead too, Eric. Am I incorrect on
Not,
that one?
I don't know. You know, some of them were in there, but the Dead connection is good in this particular version. So you mentioned, implied, I think, Amy Rigby, that I had seen, I could have seen 300 Dylan shows. I'm more like 60 or 70.
Okay.
But it's, I started in 74 on the tour of Since Immortalized by Elizabeth Nelson and the liner notes to the now sold out 27 CD. Damn, I should have hawked you, Elizabeth, for a hard copy of that thing. But anyway, oh well. I saw a bunch of shows. I saw the Warfield, the Christ show, 80, and then, you know, 79, so the Boom Off the Stage show. And I remember standing literally next to Bill Graham as this was going down and turning to Graham and saying, can you imagine? Who would have thought after Newport that this could happen to Bob Dylan again? Because people are like booing. There's like outright anger in the hall on those shows. Then he came back in 80 and did just a colossal stand at the same Fox Warfield. And that's when, again, I'm digressing here, but it's vaguely relevant to the Grateful Dead and what we've played. He does To Ramona, and Jerry Garcia comes out and plays with him. And then a couple shows later, he did Groom Still Waiting at the Altar and Rolling Stone with Mike Bloomfield. It was Mike Bloomfield's last concerts before he passed away in 81. And, of course, I missed that night. The reason I'm heading here is the best Dylan show I've ever seen, and maybe the best concert I've ever seen, was right here in Santa Cruz, California, on the 2000 tour, March 15th, 2000. He played the Santa Cruz Civic, and he was just completely dialed into whatever makes Santa Cruz weird. Dylan, there was a club called Positively Front Street, a hippie bar, and Dylan brought it up on stage before he did Positively 4th Street. Like he made that connection. So he was just completely at home. But this is the version of Elizabeth's song that he did that night. And it's an audience tape, but it does capture, I think, the performance in this song.
Looks like tomorrow is coming home bad. I ain't complaining about what I got. See better days, but who has not? Give me all, silver and gold. Won't buy back a beat of a hundred gold.
Thank you.
could decide who was right or wrong. Your silver and gold were bound by the beat of a hot rock call. Silvio, I got to go.
Guys, what did you think of that?
Woo!
Amazing.
Yeah, no, both nights were in. And the night I missed, he played the 15th and the 16th. The second night, he brought out Highlands. Okay?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. You know, and I'm thinking, now I had to, oh, I had to go back to L.A. or some idiotic reason. But at least I caught that one night. And this would be, in case you're just tuning in, to KSQD, KSQT Prunedale. I can't say KSQD Prunedale enough. This is a special hour and, hour and 15 minutes now. God, time has flown. 3-hour birthday special on Bob Dylan.
I'm enjoying every second.
Yeah, they just fly by. You know what I'm saying? I was going to say, oh, you like that show from, I got to Don't Think Twice. It'll, you know, knock you out. I'll play that. We don't have time, folks. And in fact, we have so many good choices because Elizabeth Nelson and Amy Rigby have picked a great playlist and we're bouncing back and forth. And Amy, you called this next one and you had a...
I first want to say I've covered Silvio quite a bit. If you want a like a real banger that like you can just throw together with a band who you haven't, you know, practiced with, that one that one really works, you know. It's just like it just kind of plays itself.
And Robert Hunter too. I mean, it is such a great, and they did another record, I think, Together Through Life, you know, that they did another album of another set of collaborations. And the fact that those two working together and the Dylan can with other songwriters is pretty miraculous, which brings me to Amy Rigby.
Well, I was reading Carol Bayer Sager's excellent autobiography. I can't remember what it's called. Is it called They're Playing Our Song or some? Not sure what the title is. They're Playing Our Song, maybe. Yeah, that's the title. And so she, you know, talks about all her different collaborations and being with Burt Bacharach. But, you know, I didn't know that she'd written a song with Bob Dylan. And it was a really great scene in the book where she, you know, he kind of is looking for co-writers and summons her to his barn.
Up in Malibu. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, they just kind of sit down on these camp beds facing each other and just kind of throw lines back and forth. And she keeps telling him, like, I don't want to take credit for the song. Like, you're coming up with most of the lines. And he keeps saying, yeah, but like, if you weren't here, I wouldn't be writing this song. So, but it's very cool. And it gave the title for the album Knocked Out Loaded, but she says he wrote that line.
Well, the interesting thing is we're playing a song from one of Dylan's most reviled albums, Knocked Out Loaded, a song that was written with Carol Bayer Seeger, let's just say, the Grateful Dead, punk, new wave, or DIY, or whatever your biographies contain, demo or not, huge fans of that. So with all that said, Under Your Spell.
something about you that I can't shake. Don't know how much more of this I can take, baby. I'm under your spell. I was knocked out and loaded in the naked night when my last dream exploded. I noticed your light, baby.
Gutsy choice, and listen to that. I'm surprised that hasn't been covered. You know, that is a good, solid, lots of people could do that in all sorts of different forms. I was Googling. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, I love those backup singers in that, wait, how they say, wait. It's just very cool.
Well, the thing I should point out, we're talking about unlikely duets, and we're going to get to some of Bob's crooning in just a little bit. You know, Streisand and Dylan, they have collaborated on a duet, and I just pulled up the title, The Very Thought of You. So speaking of an interesting, you know, an interesting mashup, not unlike Carol Seeger and Dylan. And what else are they and it's also came out that Dylan said it. He wrote Lay Lady Lay for Streisand. He thought he'd get it in a soundtrack or something. And she said, was flabbergasted by that. But Okay, I'm digressing all over, and I'll say one last thing. The Barbara Streisand biography, that book is amazing. Amy Rigby.
It's so good.
Okay, am I right on this? Is that a great book or what? You're an authoress.
I was setting off on a long road trip, driving all the way out to Wisconsin from New York, and I was like, okay, I'm going to put this thing on. The Audible version.
Oh, the audio, and she reads it. It must have been incredible.
She reads it, and she does all these wonderful little asides, like, yeah, sometimes Jim and I like to go for a little ice cream, and, you know, she just sticks these things in there. Oh, it was 48 hours of bliss. I had to pull over to the side of the road and cry when it ended. You know, I just felt like I'd lived this incredible life with her. It was so good, but isn't she doing a duet with...
Paul McCartney, too.
Yeah.
The Dylan one I'm really interested in, you know, I'm really interested in that one. And I'm I got totally into Barbara. I read that book, by the way. I had a very arm's length relationship with Barbara Streisand. I read the book. It knocked me out, and I went on, this will shock you, you ladies, obsessive quest. I have like everything she's ever done now. I've got just every single note and complete. I saw What's Up, Doc. I'd never seen that movie before.
Great movie. Great movie.
Yeah, I saw it and was like, this is a really good movie, you know.
And if you're a Sondheim fan, I mean.
Her covers are to die for. Yeah.
I mean, and she painted such a great picture of him, I thought, in her book of Stephen Sondheim. She loved him so much.
Again, it is actually relevant. How often do I get a chance to tell the story in the radio? I read Streisand's book, and she says wonderful things about William Wyler, you know, who directed Funny Girl, just says that he taught me to be a movie actress, just absolutely loved him. I'm pals with Wyler's daughter, Catherine Wyler, because I did a film involving William Wyler's, actually it's on... My restoration of the Memphis Belle is on tomorrow night on TCM at 7 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Nice. But anyway, I was able to call Catherine and say, have you read Babs's book yet? She had, and I said, well, let me read you what she said about your dad, which totally floored her. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those, if you get a chance to do something like that, you do it. So, all right, we're doing a show about Bob Dylan. Elizabeth Nelson, help, please. You've got to get us now to your next choice. You've had plenty of time to think about what to do. So over to you.
Okay, I think I can segue. So we're talking about interpreters of songs. Barbara Streisand is a great example. I interviewed Judy Collins, who's also another great interpreter of other people's music, including Sondheim, also Dylan. And so I thought it would be fun. And also, by the way, Amy Rigby, great interpreter of Silvio, I understand. So this is really exciting. And, you know, it's funny because Dylan, you know, like, I think he kind of got famous because of other people interpreting his music, whether it's Joan Baez or Judy Collins. But it's funny because we were talking about his phrasing, which I always think is so difficult. So I actually don't think it's like that easy to cover Dylan. And so I'm always impressed when somebody takes it on and brought over to the tape that I'm sure everybody is aware of, or maybe everybody is, because I have been very evangelical about how good I think Off the Grid, Doing It Dylan by Charlie Daniels is. And I originally got I got religion around this record because I was writing an article about Charlie Daniels for the Oxford American. And I know that he is probably rightly maligned for becoming sort of like a right-wing radical in his later stages, but...
Yeah, still Charlie Daniels. Come on, let's move, you know?
Yeah, hell yeah. I'm sorry.
I'm with you, totally. It's like, okay. I'm a CD fan, trust me.
Okay,
me
so
too,
CD.
Me too.
Okay, good. I'm glad I'm in a safe space then.
The CDB, how's that?
Last Roundup, my country band, we covered a Charlie Daniels song called Drinking My Baby Goodbye. I just thought it was such a great record.
He's very remarkable. And one of the things, in addition to being a great songwriter of his own, was that he was also a really good session man. And he worked with Dylan a lot. And Dylan loved him. You know, he had a few records with Dylan, but I think it was principally known for his work on New Morning. So he's like, I think he's really interesting. And so, like, this cover, like, so he did a record called Off the Grid, Doing It Dylan. I'm
probably convinced he couldn't decide which title to go with, so he just went with both. But it's just it's a straight up Dylan covers record, and it's awesome. Like, it's one of my favorite Dylan covers records. And I think because Charlie and Dylan had such, you know, a great working relationship in the studio, he really understood Dylan's phrasing and Dylan's, you know, whole vibe. And so the song that I wanted to play is his cover of Quinn the Eskimo, which is a song I do not like. I've never liked it. I've always thought it was silly. But when I heard Charlie Daniels' version of it, I fell in love with it. It's so exciting. When the violin kicks in, if you don't like it, then I'm sorry. I don't think you like music.
Some are building mine, your mess, and others jotting down notes. Everybody's in despair, every girl and every boy. But when Quinn the Eskimo gets here, everybody gonna jump for joy. Come on without, come on within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn. But I like to be just like the rest, and I like my sugar sweet. Garden fumes and making haste, it just ain't my cup of meat. Everybody's neat the trees, feeding pigeons on a limb. But when Quinn the Eskimo gets here, all the pigeons gonna run to him. Oh, come on without, come on within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn. Yeah, come on without, come on within. You'll not. But when Quinn the Eskimo gets here, everybody gonna want a doze. Y'all now, come on without, come on within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn. Yeah, come on without, come on within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn.
KSQD Santa Cruz 90.7 FM, KSQT Prunedale 89.7 FM, and Translator K20HGE Monterey 89.5 FM.
Oh, Father,
I see my light, I see my light come shining from the west down to the east. start any day now, any day now, I shall be released. I see my light come shining from the west down to the east. Any day now, any day now, I shall be released. Dylan.
Wow. That is, can you imagine if, you know, in a parallel universe, if Elvis had hooked up with the band and Elvis had sung the band the Brown Album, Elvis singing Night They Drove Old Dixie Gown or Across the Great Divide, backed by the band in 1969, or Elvis covering I Threw It All Away, as Gil Marcus suggested, you know, I mean, yeah. When you think of what Elvis could have done with the right material, you know. Anyway, I digress.
It's heartbreaking, yeah.
But that is...
What could have been.
Yeah, that, and you hear the way he says, Dylan, you know, with total, like, well, it's the man. The thing is that we never could pin down, went to see the Gypsy. Did he write it about seeing Elvis in Vegas? How could Dylan not have gone to Vegas to see Elvis? Everybody did. But I, as an obsessive Dylan historian, there's no... smoking gun. There's no third party to corroborate that except for Dylan and Chronicles 2, I guess. Speaking of Bob Dylan, I'd be remiss if people are just tuning in at the top of our last hour. This is a 3-hour now, less than an hour to go, Amy Rigby and Elizabeth Nelson. We should just hijack the station. I'll just barricade myself in and we'll just keep going all day on this, on the occasion of Dylan's birthday. But I'll play this one. Amy, this is Amy Rigby. This is one of the, not say the few songs on your list, but I have this on my list. I had a backup list in case I couldn't find you guys of what I was going to play. And then I happily threw it all out for this great list that you've programmed. But this song was on my list, too. And it's from Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, if that jogs your memory, Amy, for an introduction.
Yeah, just... such a great film and such a great film soundtrack. And I was working in this bookstore bar in Hudson, New York for many years, and many days I just, when I needed something to play to get me through that kind of lull in the afternoon, I would put on the soundtrack album, and it just casts such a vibe. It is just, it's magic.
Billy, that old lie. be so free. Camping out all night on the veranda, dealing cards till dawn in La Hacienda. Up to Bootheel and like the Senya. Baby, don't you turn your back on me. Playing around with some sweet senorita. Into her dark hole where she will lead you. Till the shadows of the mesa see where it meets you. And you're so far away from home.
What a killer version. When you think, Amy Rigby and Elizabeth Nelson, about the genesis of that, you know, Dylan's his first movie role down in Durango for the insane, clinically insane Sam Peckinpah. Then he goes up to Mexico City. And in the studio, I think it's Booker T., Mr. Tambourine Man himself, Bruce Langhorne, and Jim Keltner on drums. And they just kind of jam out the soundtrack. And then out of that comes Knocking on Heaven's Door. Have you ever heard that? I wish I had it handy. I was looking for it. The table scrap called Rock Me Mama, which becomes Wagon Wheel, you know, that big hit song. He just knocks off that basic patent song. You know, all the parts you remember, he just spits out on whatever he was drinking. Amazing stuff.
I was hoping you were going to have some info about who played on that. And I just wish I knew how they got that acoustic guitar sound.
Well,
it's just the best.
Well, Bruce Lynn, I think it was a studio in Mexico City. No, he went to Burbank. Sorry. This stuff was in Burbank. So these are the pros. You don't get Jim Keltner. You know, he's coming in to do the session.
Yes, from what I could find, it looked like they started it in Mexico City, but most of what we hear on the soundtrack album came from Burbank.
But it's also Dylan with a creative gun to his head, if you think about it. He's doing the soundtrack, and he doesn't just do a soundtrack. He does one of the great soundtracks. I mean, the instrumental music's amazing, that title theme. You know, I can't praise it enough. And I'll move on here, but one of the reasons that spoke to me so much is I became a Dylan fanatic in the fall of 1971 when I heard the Concert from Bangladesh soundtrack. And for the very first time, I heard Hard Rain and Mr. Tambourine Man. But I think still, one of the best ever performances of both those songs is at Bangladesh. And I was an instant fanatic. But that was the worst year, 1972 and what, 1968 and 1977 are like the drought years. Bob's not doing anything. He's off the grid in that year. So the first new Dylan record that comes out when I'm a fanatic, I'm now fanatic, what's new is the soundtrack to Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. And it wasn't what I expected. I know that's a shock to both of you that Dylan doesn't deliver what you expect. But now in hindsight.
Did you go buy a copy at the record store?
At Antioch College, Yellow Springs. I went
It
came out. I got the day it came out. I was right there. So,
I didn't know you. I don't think I knew you went there, or did I?
I was briefly there. Footloose, and I went up and wait for it. Drum roll, please, local listeners, Santa Cruz. You see Santa Cruz, which is where my bond to this community back in 1974. Too much personal stuff, and no one wants to hear my personal stuff when I've got two music celebrities on, and that would be Amy Rigby, who needs no introduction, and Elizabeth Nelson, who needs no introduction either. So how about that? I'm just going to move right on with your tremendous accomplishments. Elizabeth, I think we agreed on a song, and you've had time to take notes, and I'm sure there's a lot of – on the poster board, you've gritted out now what you're going to say. But this is a tough one to introduce because it's such a complex song.
Yeah. So I believe that we settled on She's Your Lover Now, which is on the bootleg series. It's a song that he actually never used. I believe it was supposed to be on Blonde on Blonde. It's a song that builds. There's just a lot of puperative retribution that just builds and builds throughout the song. Then they just sort of abandon it at the end. Which is kind of incredible because it's not a short song. I think this goes back to a comment that I made in the first hour when we were talking about, you know, songs that were left off of Infidels, like Blind Willie McTell or whatever. I don't understand why this song never would have seen the light of day. So it's just very exciting to me when, you know, you get a bootleg series come out and it's like, wow, like he just decided to leave that off of a record. And this one was just abandoned. Really.
And this contains, too, I'm going to try to dig it up on the Google, that it let's just say it cuts off at an inopportune. This is the Coleridge writing Kubla Khan. You know, Dylan, there's someone to knock at the door and he doesn't finish the work. So
exactly.
We share your frustration, everybody. But this is the band, by the way, the band 65, a little bit of arcane setup. So the frustration with all this is the band just didn't get it. And I've heard the cutting edge, the entire She's Your Lover Now sessions, about an hour's worth of music. And Dylan's getting more and more pissed off. He's getting very testy because they're just not giving him what he wants. And he finally gives up on it. And then he goes and he plays a solo version of it, which is an epic performance. It's out there now, I think, I think it's out officially now. But this was the last studio take. So anyway, we've talked much too long. This is the combined lecture. And as I said earlier, this would be the lab.
Your pawnbroker roared. Also, so did the landlord. You see me so crazy. Wasn't me. Both were so glad to watch me destroy what I had. Pain sure brings out the best in people, doesn't it? Why didn't you just leave me? Maybe you didn't want to stay. Why'd you have to treat me so bad? Did it have to be that way? Remember something you forgot to say. Yes, and you, I see you're still with her. Well, that's fine, but she's coming on so strange. Can't you tell? Somebody better explain. She's got her iron chain. But I just can't remember how. You talk to her, she's your lover now. Ah, I already assumed that we're in the felony room. But I ain't the judge, you don't have to be. Tell that to your friend in the cowboy hat. You know he keeps on saying everything twice to me. You know I was straight with you. You know I never.
change you in any way. You know if you didn't want to be with me that you didn't have to stay. Now you stand here saying you forgive and forget. Honey, what can I say? Sit around and ask for ashtrays, can't you reach? I see you kiss her on the cheek every time she gives a speech. Well, her picture books of the pyramid and her postcards of Billy the Kid. Must everybody talk to her about it. You're her lover now. Oh, everybody that cares is going up the castle stairs. It all. I can't even remember El Paso, honey. Never had to be faithful. I never wanted you to grieve. Why was it so hard for you if you didn't want to be with me just to
just the way that Dylan's voice curls with contempt on that line. Great, great thing. Okay. This is the frustration, Amy Rigby and Elizabeth Nelson. So I heard that in the early 70s, and it took 20 years for the last verse to come out. Imagine it. It really was this thing about like the missing reels of the Magnificent Ambersons or something. It's like all of a sudden, what? It's finished? We can see it? But it goes... The lyric,
did you wonder?
Yeah,
did
the lyric.
You wonder if he dreamt it?
If he dreamt it, yeah. But he's that completes the line. Now your eyes cry wolf, while your mouth cries, "I'm not scared of animals like you." Thank you, Bob. What do you really think there? Yeah, that's where he goes with that. Amy Rigby, you know, with all due respect, it is what now? Very late in England and jolly old. So we got to keep you up. We got to keep that blood a flowing. So I think you chose this. you chose this next song very strategically. I think you know your biorhythms. Let's just put it that way.
Yes, yes. It's a great cover, and one that I only discovered pretty recently, so just blew my mind.
And when you speak of the phrase "blew my mind," is it the appropriate phrase when you play anything performed by Rocky Erickson, correct?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yonder stands.
definitely having a flaccid ashback after hearing that. That is an amazing piece of music.
I wonder, do you think Bob Dylan ever listens to the covers of his songs? Because I just think, you know, he would just be like on the floor weeping if he heard that. I don't know.
Elizabeth, yeah, anything? Yeah, whoa.
Yeah, I want to believe that he probably does check other versions of his material. I do think he is an avid listener. I want to believe that he is an avid listener. Does he get to everything? I have no idea. But I want, for that version, I hope he did hear it because it's great.
But the Theme Time Radio Hour, you know, he and Eddie Gordesky, who was the, you know, Dylan's muse on that, but the two of them, what they don't know about music, you know, there's a story about this, we're occupying the space formerly held by the Grateful Dead Zone, about Garcia and Dylan backstage playing, you know, during the Dead Dylan tour. And if this could only have been put on stage, just swapping folk songs. And, you know, mm-hmm. But Garcia said, Dylan knows everything, you know, mm-hmm. everything. It soaks up. And I think that's one of the reasons, one of the just operating parts. And Elizabeth, you'll appreciate this. I had this discussion in David Remnick's office with him, okay?
Wow.
As I said, that Dylan is physiologically engineered to be Dylan. Like Hendrix's fingers were longer than, you know, he had, you know, he could do things physically that other guitarists couldn't do. And mm-hmm. Dylan, a couple of things is Dylan's memory, where he really remembers everything, you know, just an absolute memory. And he has a big rib cage. If you watch, look at pictures of Dylan. The guitar's always propped way up. And I've seen him on stage, and you've seen him. He's a bantam little rooster. He's got a big rib cage. You know what? He can hold notes longer than Caruso, is what he says in Don't Look Back. So he can play harmonica solos. You know, he can do things that other musicians can't do. And Elizabeth, at this point, David Remnick started looking very nervous and sort of ushered me out of the office. It's like, okay, this guy is even crazier than I am about this stuff. But all right, now somehow from that, Elizabeth Nelson, we've got to go to your next request.
So this actually came from one of the many people who plays guitar in the Paranoid style, William Matheny, who has played in my band for a very, very long time. I asked him, you know, if you could hear one Dylan song on the radio on his birthday, which would it be? And he said, I dreamed I saw St. Augustine, which I thought was actually a really cool, deep pick. John Wesley Harding. And I'm is that William up with that because he's a huge Dylan fan, just like the rest of us. And I think, like, the thing about this song that's kind of cool, again, is it's like it's in that same vein of Blind Willie McTell. Not that it was left off a record, but it's kind of visionary. And like Dylan is, in addition to his big ribcage, he is able to see into portals with a deeper idea of humanity. And in It's All Right, Ma, he says, you know, if he thought his dreams could be seen, they'd put his head in a guillotine. I'm so glad that they haven't, because we get songs like this of his visions.
Well, you had a line, and I'm looking for it now, from one of your – yes, this is it. And you wrote this about Every Grain of Sand, but it mm-hmm. also fits this song, I think. 6 minutes of dread and awe, which quiveringly stands face to face with the reality of man. Bob mm-hmm. Dylan's Every Grain of Sand is the scariest and most comforting song to emerge from Bob's VIP access to the spirit world.
I dreamed I saw St. Augustine alive. Carrying through these quarters in the utmost misery, with a blanket underneath his arm and a coat of solid gold, searching for those very souls whom already have been sold. Arise, arise, he cried so loud in a voice. Augustine, alive with fiery breath. And I dreamed I was amongst the ones that put him out to death. Oh, I awoke in anger without a place to stand or hide. I put my fingers against the glass and bowed my head and cried.
An outtake from John Wesley Harding. That was always a holy grail to me because that was never bootlegged before. And John Wesley Harding is a perfect record. I just love that record. And that outtake came out of I Dreamed I Saw St. Augustine. You're listening to KSQD, KSQT, Prunedale. We're in the last 25 minutes, Amy Rigby and Elizabeth Nelson. Can you believe it? I know we're all lamenting all the stuff we don't have time to play, right?
So much, so many albums and killer tracks and just covers that, yeah, we just can't, just too much, too many riches.
Well, you mentioned something earlier about, and it's, you took us on that trip with the 13th floor elevator. So set and setting, it's important for acid heads, not present company, well, we'll leave that on the cutting room floor, but it's also for when a Bob Dylan song hits you or what it evokes when you hear something. So last week when I read about that, the Nottoway Plantation, which was an unreconstructed, we hold weddings on the slaves' quarters atrocity down south, and it burned to the ground. And the moment that happened, you know, the phrase karma comes to mind. You know, it's just, and, you know, so I did a, anyway, I went long on it on a radio show. But immediately this song came up. So when I heard that, it was like I knew this was the song that captured that whole thing. So ladies and gentlemen, and Amy Rigby and Elizabeth Nelson, let's see if you agree.
Seen the arrow on the doorpost saying this land is condemned, all the way from New Orleans to Jerusalem. Well, I traveled through East Texas where many martyrs fell, and I know no one can sing the blues like Blind Willie McTell. I've heard that hoot owl singing as they were taking down the tents. The stars above the barren trees was his only audience. Them charcoal gypsy maidens can strut their feathers well, but nobody can sing blues like Blind Willie McTell. See that big plantation's burning. Hear the cracking of the whips. Smell that sweet magnolia bloom and see the ghost of slavery ships. I can hear them tribes moaning. Hear that undertaker's bell.
with some fine young handsome man. He's dressed up like a squire, bootleg of whiskey in his hand. There's a chain gang on the highway, I can hear them rebels yell.
Taylor, ladies and gentlemen, on that fade-out. Blind Willie McTell, that's quite an adult portion. And Bob has been playing that this last week, by the way. It's back in the set list. So, you know, good ideas never go. This is KSQD, KSQT. And, boy, I want to dilate space and time here. We have 20 minutes left. Where do we go? What do we do? Well, I'm just going to do what any good radio host would do, is just abandon ship. I'll turn it over to Elizabeth Nelson. So play us into this one.
Great. Thank you so much. Always happy to take the helm in the final moments before we go down in a blaze of glory. So I wanted to play this next song because we are coming up on the end of the show. And I know this isn't the final song that we'll play, but it's one that's sort of deeply meaningful to me. It's Dylan singing "The Night We Called It a Day," which is a great standard that I think was popularized by Sinatra. But Dylan's reading of it is really great, and no one can sing the standards like Bob Robert Zimmerman, Dylan. And so this recording, actually, Eric miraculously was able to grab from when he sang it on the David Letterman show in 2015 during the last week of Letterman's run. And it's just, it's really beautiful and it's really moving. And I encourage everybody to go to YouTube and actually check out the live performance of it. Because, like, so this is like a full few years before Twin Peaks The Return came out. And so, like, when I watch it, I feel like they have all of these episodes where at the end of the show they'd have this roadhouse and there's all these really frightening bands. And I, like, when I look at Dylan singing this song at the end of, you know, David Letterman's run, I'm like, David Lynch was definitely watching this and being like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. It's really spooky.
Film noir,
but it's
Bob.
Yes, and it's very transporting. And I don't actually know if Dylan and Letterman had a relationship or a friendship as such, but I knew Letterman was in awe of him, and I think Dylan really admired Letterman. So it seems like there was an affinity there. I don't think you're seeing Dylan showing up for the last episode of Jay Leno, but I thought this was such a beautiful way to say goodbye to David Letterman.
The night we called it. the sun didn't rise or dawn. There was nothing left to say.
Was beautiful. And Elizabeth Nelson, you know, that you had requested, we just don't have time for it, the Joker Man from 1984, where and Bob and the Plugs just rocked the house out, and Bob couldn't find the right harmonica, just complete chaos. And you know the main guest was on that show, and there's a great pick three shot of them. You probably know this. Liberace. Liberace, and there's a great picture of Dave, Bob, and Liberace, and was totally – actually, it's a true story. Somebody said that they were on set. It's a writer or someone I know who was actually on set, and they thought, oh, boy, I'm going to meet Bob Dylan. I'm going to meet Bob Dylan. So they finally encounter him in the hallway, and Bob walks up, and they think, oh, this is my big moment. And he goes, I want to meet Bud Melman. Where is he? Bob was fixated on meeting Larry Bud Melman, because of course he was. So Amy Rigby, we're gonna do a twofer here, because it's not often we have a guest on a Dylan birthday show who's written two of the best songs about Bob Dylan, and I think this Dubuque was after Phil Roth, right? This was a second song.
Yes, written fairly recently.
It's your Godfather 2. You topped it, you know.
Oh, gosh, I got to do Godfather 3 now. But, yeah, it came I guess it was, I think it was the early days of the pandemic that I wrote this song.
Was it inspired by the Dubuque crowd incident? And if so, can you set that up? Because that's just a great frame for this.
It was very much inspired by that 96 concert of Bob in Dubuque, Iowa, and they had no security at that show, and so it felt like I'd heard about it for years, and then it turned up on YouTube, and you can actually watch the whole concert, and half the audience ends up on stage with him. And
it's where they're packed together. I mean, Bob is, they're right there.
Right there. They're dancing. They're kissing. They have girls keep coming up and kissing.
And Bob keeps going, and he's just in the Bob zone. It's like when, what was his name? Soy Bomb at the Grammys. Yeah. You know, Bob just keeps on going. It's like, well,
he's
okay.
The eye of the storm. Yeah, that's just raging around him. And he never really broke character at all. There felt like towards the end, maybe he kind of gives like a little chuckle, and he seemed to enjoy the girls kissing him. And the band was really just rocking, and I found it very inspiring. And also, I guess that whole visceral thing of people being together, I remember just watching it over and over again during the isolation of COVID, and so yeah, it turned into just a little bit of a mantra.
And this earwig will be planted in your brain, and we'll tell you where to go to get it. Well, we'll go through that in a second. Anyway, Dylan in Dubuque. It's just such a great, great song. And Amy Rigby and Elizabeth Nelson, I think you would agree, just as a great bit of writing about Dylan, when you write, "I'm shameless, I'm grateful, on the road to somewhere else. Sometimes I play the martyr, but I mostly play myself." That just killed me when I first heard it, and it killed me when I just heard it again. A great, great line.
I felt like Bob himself when I wrote that line.
Really? Did that stick out? Did you know? We're among friends here. Did you know? You must have known. Man, that's a good one. I nailed that one. Time to go to bed. So. I'll finish this tomorrow.
No. To me, that means I got to finish this song right now. I can't wait. Yeah. If I feel like I got a good line like that, it's got to.
Did that come first? I mean, you know, they say what came first, the music or the lyrics? First, the check. But what came first? That line, was that the thing that sparked the whole thing?
It just started at the beginning and went all the way to the end, and just trying to find words that rhymed with Dubuque was the biggest challenge.
Yeah.
But that was sort of like a good challenge. I take that inspiration from Bob Dylan a lot. Like, his rhymes always surprise me. Yeah. And you know, that's kind of like one of the fun things about writing songs, is just like, when you find the rhyme, you find the meaning that you don't know you're looking for till it gets unlocked by this word that you just like kind of pick out of the air that matches the one that you're trying to, you know?
You know what? That is a perfect, perfect way to end this show that you do know, even though it's late, late in England, we could go another 3 hours. This has just been a delight. This is Eric Nelson, and this has been a 3-hour tribute to the great Bob Dylan, Birthday Boy. I told you guys, it does. It's just fly. And there's so much, ladies and gentlemen, we left on the cutting room floor. There's just so much to talk about. But and Elizabeth Nelson, thank you. You could set up the. You said it best. You said something about this being the appropriate song to end on. So why don't you quantify that for us?
For sure. And just let me say thanks, Amy and Eric, for having me along on this very, very fun ride. And I do wish it could continue. The last song that was one of my choices is Pressing On. We've done a lot of 80s Dylan on this episode, and I'm very grateful for that. And I'm sure Amy's and my friend, mutual friend, Chuck Prophet, will be very happy about all of this because he loves 80s Dylan. So, Chuck, shout out to you. This one is Pressing On, which I believe is on his album Saved. I think we're going to listen to a bootleg version of it. But what I love about this song, it's one of Dylan's gospel tunes, and so, you know, this might be a turnoff for you. You can turn the radio off now if you want. But I think this is an incredibly compassionate song, and no matter what you think about gospel, no matter what you think about Christianity, I think the message in this is that you have to keep going, which is what Dylan has always done. And I think Dylan, 1980, this might have been what he was feeling in that moment, was that he had to keep going, even when he was being doubted. And so when people were asking what he's doing, Dylan doesn't care. He's just going to keep going. He's going to keep on keeping on. And I think that's a great way to celebrate the man on his 84th birthday. May he keep on keeping on. May he keep pressing on.
I'm pressing on. Well, I'm pressing on to the higher calling of my Lord. Said I'm pressing on.
Pressing on.
Pressing on to the higher calling of my Lord. Pressing on. Pressing on. Well, I'm pressing on. Many try to stop me, try to shake me up in my mind. Say, prove to me that he's Lord. Show me a sign. What kind of sign they need when it all comes from within? When what's lost has been found, what's to come is already been. I just keep pressing on.
On and on and on.
Pressing on. Oh, can't turn back. Pressing on. To the higher calling of my Lord. Pressing on.
On and on and on.
Pressing on
to the high.